there are moments that come out of when you're making TV that are unexpected, and I didn't, as I was performing it, and even when I wrote it, I don't think I knew what the context of the moment was and how emotional it would be, I guess, for people who were invested in the storyline. And even once it aired, people were like, I was sobbing through your performance. And me, looking at that performance, being like, I thought I was doing something funny. I'm glad that it carried a deeper significance than it did.
Welcome to EW's Binge. I'm Shana Naomi Crockmall.
And I'm Patrick Gomez.
We are binging our way through an entire show that we love with one podcast episode focused on each season.
And today we are talking about season 4 of Schitt's Creek. The series originally aired on the CBC and Pop TV and now can be streamed on Netflix.
And joining us to answer all of our questions.
Sitting here very silently until
very
he feels like
silent.
I don't know when I can
so
chime
politely.
In.
You should start. You can do the intro.
Hi, everybody.
Yeah, at this point,
hi.
You can do the intro.
Hi.
I'm
Levy.
My name's Dan, and I'm a co-creator of the show Schitt's Creek, and I'm here to talk about our fourth season.
There you go. Quick note, if you're worried about spoilers, we're only going to give away key plot points as best we can through the first 4 seasons.
I feel like we've been pretty respectful.
We've been pretty good, actually, and this is where I feel like it gets a little muddy, like into season 4 and season 5, right. But we're trying, we're doing this. Make sure you come back and listen to the rest after you're all caught up, but also just feel free to hit pause and go watch all 5 seasons.
Yeah, because as cool as we are, the show is better. Yeah.
So. Thanks so much. I paid these two tremendous amounts of money to
yes.
say that.
There you go. In merch.
Yeah,
in
merch. There we go. There we go.
Not even. I owe you a new sweatshirt.
So before we start diving into season 4, was it before season 4 or before season 5 that you guys hit Netflix? Or like when did that come into play?
I want to say season 3.
Okay.
Yeah.
So did you see a major change happen at that point in terms of just like
there
accessibility?
There was definitely a shift in the sort of in people finding it and liking it, I guess. I think the more eyes you can get on your show, the better. And I think for Netflix to have sort of the scope and breadth of sort of, you know, viewership really helped keep the conversation alive. And I also think because we, you know, premiere in January on Pop and then Netflix happened in October, it allowed for almost a full year where people were discovering, were talking about the show, which is a wonderful thing.
And it's very bingeable. Have you ever like, have you sat down and
watched a single episode?
Oh, so not one at a time,
well,
but alone all at once.
Yeah. I'm in the edit suite for hours and hours and hours.
So 10 years from now,
I watched our season 5 finale with a group.
Oh. Okay.
I watch the finales usually with our cast because we are tweeting or whatever. So
yeah, it's very easy to watch. Even in like
I'm
working
so
on this,
glad and
rewatched
relieved.
So much of it, yeah. And I had to remind myself I don't have time to actually rewatch. I have to fast forward. I can't watch every single episode again because it's easy to slip into it. It feels good.
It has
like I think this, along with some of those other shows that are on right now, we were talking about this, like The Good Place or these other, like, I feel like this is a good time for shows about people who are trying to be good.
Yeah, absolutely. One of our directors called the show Breaking Good. And I thought, that is a perfect articulation of what we were trying to do with this. Slowly but surely, these characters are coming into their own and realizing that happiness and like self-fulfillment are far more valuable and can do far more for you as a human than money.
And choosing humanity, sort of, and kindness.
Choosing to be kind and supportive.
Love.
Yes.
Yeah. It shouldn't be, I just feel like it is still the rarity to watch a show that understands that that's the story it's trying to tell.
Well, I'm happy to be part of a positive wave of stuff, I guess.
Yeah. And yet be so good at all of these little mini mean moments in the middle of it.
Right? You gotta keep the tang.
There we go. We're gonna get to the tang specifically in a second. Kay. But before we start diving into season 4, again, we're gonna have you do 30 seconds, summarize this season.
Boy,
are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Ready, set.
Yeah.
Go.
Season 3 ends with a slightly deeper understanding for all of our characters in terms of who they are, what they want, and what they're realizing they're capable of. And season 4 is pushing the characters one step further, pushing them outside of their comfort zones. I think up until this point, they've really been conflicted about who they are, what they want, and what the town means to them. And season 4 is an opportunity for them to really stand firm in who they are and what makes them tick.
You were a little over, but we'll give it to you.
31 and a half seconds.
It's fine.
And
it's
gonna
fine.
Drive
we'll charge you. We're going to charge you for that extra second and a half. No, so
again, broad sweeping generalizations, but
it's okay. Now we get into specifics.
Yeah. So it starts off with the episode is called Dead Guy in Room 4.
Yes.
There's a dead guy, which is fantastic.
You didn't know what the episode's about.
Yeah. We also see David and Patrick start to develop the relationship more, which is fantastic. I also love that the pregnancy test episode that happens in the very early episodes where everyone thinks Alexis is pregnant, but it's really Jocelyn. Her miracle baby, as she calls her.
Mm-hmm.
We get to meet Ted's new girlfriend when David and Alexis go to her farm.
Yes.
I love your comments about blue cheese because I feel the same.
There is something so familiar about your voice. Oh, no, people have told me that I just have like one of those voices.
Mm-hmm. Super generic and shrill. Anyway, I just happened to eat one of those pieces of blue cheese. And normally, I don't like blue cheese in my mouth, but that was very not bad.
I am with you. I wasn't a fan of it either until I started using it in salads.
Can't do it. Are you a blue cheese person?
Yeah, I like it.
I feel like you're a better person.
I'll take
I always
that.
Feel like inadequate not liking blue cheese.
Me too, because
like there's a sophistication I'm lacking.
I am not, I will say that my wife is better at all kinds of food and drink than I am. And when I travel without her, I will literally like text her pictures of the menu and be like, which of these wines am I supposed to pick?
Right.
I cannot order a wine to save my life.
I know which ones I like. Just, it might be the $2 bottle. Like,
yeah.
Oh, I thought we were talking about cheese. I'm like, I like a
brie.
Sure.
Yeah.
I do
cheddar.
Love a brie.
These go together.
I like a Gruyere.
Pepper Jack.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. Yes. bigger moments in the show.
I love it.
More
higher stakes.
Higher stakes is even death.
Oh, thank God. The internet says you're dead.
What? What do you mean? Who's saying that? Your mother's not dead.
I'm standing right here. Yeah, well, now I know, but it's weird because they're still saying it.
So people are believing it?
Well, it doesn't help that Alexis just tweeted goodbye to a great actress with a cool sunglasses emoji.
Okay, I'm wearing sunglasses because I'm in mourning, David.
What is the source of this falsehood? And what photo are they using?
Or almost death.
Death.
In a death hoax that Moira...
theoretical death.
Everything in Moira's dead. And I have to tell you, when Grumpy Cat sadly passed away recently, my first thought was, the poor kitten. The poor kitten that overtakes Moira the giraffe steps on the kitten. Mm-hmm. I love it. It's trending.
It's trending.
But the moment that I want to dive deep in first with is, I use the word dive deep so many times in this discussion.
Listen,
apparently.
That's what we're doing.
There we go. Is Asbestos Fest, where your character and Moira have to perform.
Yes.
Or I guess you don't have to perform. You choose to perform with
Moira. Moira has agreed to headline Asbestos Fest. Which at
were there other
where does that name come from?
Were there other diseases or afflictions or challenges that you considered that just didn't rhyme as well?
Not really. I think we covered them all when Moira talks about the various like benefits that she's done in the past, like juvenile rhinoplasty benefits.
Very important.
And I think there was like a some sort of skin disorder,
very specific.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's done a lot. She does anything and everything that will, you know, have her.
Luckily, a little birdie told me that with enough funds raised, this town could be asbestos free by Christmas. Ding.
Dong.
Ding.
Dong.
Dong,
ding,
dong.
On the first day of Christmas, my true love gave to me the keys to a Lamborghini.
On the deck the halls with boughs of holly.
Yes, I said faithful, which rules out all of you.
Asbestos Fest, which she originally thought was a celebration of asbestos in the town.
Yay,
not,
asbestos.
About getting rid of the remaining bits of asbestos, I guess. Signs up for it, realizes again that this is going to force her to do what she has always sort of been fearful of, which is act. It's been a long time, and she sort of lists off all of these one woman shows that she's done in the past, like Shoes, Glorious Shoes, the Imelda Marcos story,
Is there a Patty Hearst moment, perhaps?
There's a Patty Hearst. So she decides on the Patty Hearst one-woman show and realizes that she can't pull it off. She can't respect Patty's experience in the way that she really wants and can't do it justice, and panics and turns to David for help. And David, who, you know, I guess when push comes to shove, will do what he can for his mother, because I think they have a very wonderful bond, agrees to participate in their Christmas medley that they would do at their holiday parties every year. And
even though it's not near the holidays.
Not near the holidays. It's a last-ditch effort. It's so desperate and so pathetic. And you get to see Catherine O'Hara in a floor-length brunette wig that's wrapped around her hand like a purse. It was very funny. At first, I had written that with Catherine doing the medley herself, and then she said, no, I want you to sing it with me. And I was like,
had you ever sung with her before? Did she?
No, there's a reason I didn't write myself into that scene. I was playing piano.
Did
at
you
the
feel
time.
Like there was any possibility you could say no?
No.
No.
And the look in her eyes when she told me was like, you'll be doing this. And I said, when will I ever get this opportunity again to be immortalized on television?
So how long did you have to rehearse that?
We worked out the medley. She had done the whole medley and sent it to me as an MP3, and I just sort of learned my part.
She told you what to do, and you showed
up. She did
up
the whole thing.
It was
I would
full
love
circle
to take credit
from
for it.
One moment.
That Christmas medley was all of was Catherine.
And was this the birth of the idea for the Christmas special, or had that already been thought about?
I had always wanted to do one, but it wasn't until I felt like we hadn't earned it. You got to earn those big sort of tentpole moments.
Do Canadian TV series have Christmas episode specials like British TV series
no.
do? So it was just...
I mean, there's like a Christmas episode, but I guess American television would have a Christmas or a holiday episode. Which is why we wanted, I think, our last episode of the fourth season, which then got held until the holidays, to be the holiday episode. Mm-hmm. Nice. But you needed the emotional depth of the show to really earn that kind of storytelling.
Yeah.
So we're going to jump right ahead to another musical moment in this season.
Right.
So episode 6, Open Mic, it has another song in it, which to me is honestly one of the most romantic and touching moments, not just on your show, but like on any. Like I watched it in preparing for this, we were binging again, and I think I watched him sing that song like 4 or 5 times. We're of course talking about Simply the Best.
Yes.
Speak the language of love like you know what it means. And it can't be wrong. Take my heart and make it strong, babe. You're simply the best.
Where did that idea come from? Why that song?
Well, I knew.
Did you knew know no?
I knew the
song.
I knew he could sing.
Okay.
I knew that he was a really talented musician, and I obviously wanted to write something for him in a romantic capacity, like, you know, because I knew that he could pull it off. I find it incredibly cringy, like people singing generally, but I knew that he had such a confidence and a conviction to that side of his sort of like artistry. That I wanted to use it. And I think 4 seasons in, we had really been peeling back the layers enough to take the audience to these kinds of places. And I think each of our characters in the 4th season were experiencing emotional stakes that they had not been used to before, which was really fun. It was fun to get to this place where we feel like, okay, we've earned the ability to ride that fine line between comedy and real human moments. And for David, for me, it was always like, where do you find the point? Because I think in any relationship, we can pinpoint a moment or two where things change, where you go from liking a person to loving a person. Mm-hmm. And how do you articulate that and dramatize that? And I had always loved the Tina Turner song the best. And I was always that person when it came on that, like, at a busy bar would be like, stop. Listen to the lyrics. They're so beautiful.
Don't you understand what's happening
and
right now?
I thought, what a great pairing if we have him, if the setup is that he tells David he's going to perform at this open mic night, and David's sort of first impulse is like, this is so humiliating, and this is going to be a make or break point for their relationship, and it becomes this sort of pleasant surprise and romantic sort of revelation. And so I said to Noah, this is the song. It was scripted as you know, Patrick sings a surprisingly beautiful cover of Tina Turner's The Best. And we approached Noah and said, do you want us to figure out someone to come in and interpret the song, or do you want to take it on yourself? And he said, let me try it. And a couple weeks went by, and then in the middle of the night, I got this text message, and it was him singing it at home. And was like, tell me what you think. And I put it on and was like, at the time, like, as a single person receiving that, like, that's not good for anybody. But like, for me to have just like watched an episode of Downton Abbey and like said goodnight to my dog and tucked myself into bed and then received that, it was like, this is both very sweet and so dark. And I knew as soon as I heard it, because it didn't change at all, that what he had done with that song was extraordinary, and that the scene, we had a scene, because if we didn't have that song and he didn't do it the way that he had, I think that scene would not have had the kind of weight that it did and the ability to change my character in the way that it did. And then of course it came time to shooting it, and we just got to sit back and listen to him sing. And Catherine was so moved by it that she couldn't get through the episode, she couldn't get through the scene without crying, and for us it didn't really serve us well to have Moira cry, so we sort of had to like cut around it.
Well, what's funny is I would have maybe watched it. There's a second where you see her wipe. You don't. You, and I was like, you never see her cry, but she's totally wiping a tear.
Yeah,
that is so funny.
And at one point, she sort of turns back to reach for a tissue, which was not part of the scene, but it's a funny little. I mean, we. You throw it in because I think sometimes it's nice to show the candidness of of television. But it was a lovely moment. It was a moment that for me meant a lot because it was a parent supporting their kid.
What she does, because we find out Jocelyn and Roland are having a baby boy.
A baby, yeah.
And she's like, yeah. And they're trying to make her a big part of that. And she's like, I don't care. I want to focus on someone else other than me.
Well, you two, I told you I don't know.
But we do. We called the doctor.
You did, lovely.
Well, don't you want to know what it is? I'll give you three guesses.
Moira, we're having a boy.
A boy? I believe I told you that. How wonderful. My boy right now is being serenaded by his butter-voiced girl.
In your heart, I see the start of every night and every day. In your eyes, are you lost? Are you washed away? Just as long as I'm here in your arms, I can be in no better place. You're simply the best, better than all the rest, better than anyone, anyone I've ever met. Oh.
And I think even the physical, at one point she sort of reaches over and touches my arm as if to say, like, what's happening here? There's something really special happening. And I think for us to be able to project a loving and supportive family in a moment when it counts was really important. And to show that kind of physical support of a parent supporting their queer child in a really lovely and magical time in their life was a message that I wanted to, like, get out there. And fortunately, the scene was really easy to cut together. It's not hard to act like you're moved when that song is being sung to you. And people really responded to it. It was a lovely moment in the show.
So we end up meeting Patrick's ex-fiance in the whole barbecue situation. Mm-hmm. She shows up, and that leads to a fight, which then leads to another musical moment with the same song.
We got together when we were in high school. And we've been on and off ever since. I don't know, we always just sort of fell back into it. Anyway, she's been reaching out and expecting us to get back together for the past few months.
Ooh, whoa. Over the past few months? And you didn't think to tell me about this? You stood in front of me and told me to trust people.
I know.
When I was perfectly fine not trusting people. Not trusting people is what I'm used to. It is my comfort zone. But next thing I know, there's an oversized cookie on my doorstep, and you are telling me that I have nothing to worry about.
Yeah. So I knew there had to be these grand gestures, I think, because I didn't want the relationship to be super easy. I didn't want it to just constantly fall into place. And I think for David to panic when things got tough and to bring in the character of Rachel, who is his ex-fiance, and the complications of what that meant, and that being, you know, coming at a point where David was on the precipice of loving someone and using it as an excuse to say, okay, this is exactly what I thought was going to happen. Everything bad happens to me. Let's move back. And my very good friend Stacey Farber played Rachel, and it's been fun to be able to employ my friends and have them sort of like bedazzle the show a little bit. It's a wonderful thing. I think that was also a moment when we got to have Patrick really understand what the relationship means to him and really contextualize his sexuality a bit.
Because no matter how hard I tried with her, it just never felt right. And up until recently, I didn't understand why. David, I've spent most of my life not knowing what right was supposed to feel like, and then I met you, and everything changed. You make me feel right, David.
That is quite possibly one of the most beautiful things I've ever heard anyone say, outside of the Downton Christmas special.
It's the truth.
I think there was that, you know, I wrote that speech where he's saying, you make me feel right, and I've always sort of thought about why things didn't work with her, and I couldn't quite put my finger on what it was. For then David to have to earn that back after throwing a bit of a hissy fit and embarrassing himself.
Getting a lot of gifts.
It was scripted that David sort of lip syncs the song that Patrick had sung to him. And again, scripting it, being like, isn't this hysterical? And then you get it to the day, and it's like, I'm not a dancer. I'm not really a performer. I'm not a musician. I don't know what I'm going to do. And we started to think, the night before, I was just learning the lyrics to the song because I realized I had to know it. And we shot that scene right after lunch. And I requested a bottle of Prosecco to have over lunch. Noah and I split the bottle. And we shot
You're
it.
Talking like a full bottle?
Oh, a full bottle. It was
okay.
Like multiple glasses.
Okay.
And we shot it right after lunch. And what you see is basically the majority of our first take. And I think as an actor, it was the most sort of unsafe I've ever felt, in the sense that, like, I'm going to do something that's so outside of my own personal comfort zone, that level of sort of unabashed lack of consideration for how this is going to look or how it's going to appear on film. But you only get those moments so rarely. So I was like, screw it. Let's try this. And we finished the scene and our director came out and he was crying. And I didn't quite understand, because I had always pictured that moment to be quite funny. And the rest of our team behind the cameras were crying, and I remember thinking, like, I don't understand. I don't know what's going on.
Did you think
on.
You had done it wrong?
I thought I had done it wrong. And I think at times there are moments that come out of when you're making TV that are unexpected, and I didn't, as I was performing it, and even when I wrote it, I don't think I knew what the context of the moment was and how emotional it would be, I guess, for people who were invested in the storyline. And even once it aired, people were like, I was sobbing through your performance. And me looking at that performance being like, I thought I was doing something funny. I'm glad that it carried a deeper significance than it did. And I think that's just the context of the show. But it was a very memorable time. And it was also scorching hot in the store. And I was wearing leather.
Like
Givenchy sweatshirt that was lined in silk.
This is like a list of problems you got yourself into.
It was.
I've never
been hotter, and I think part of what made that scene so unhinged was just the fact that I was like
a little tipsy.
I'm gonna do whatever it takes to just get this done in as little takes as possible. But it was very fun. We had a good time.
Well, it came across. So that kind of gets
and
us
then through. Noah's song charted.
Yes,
yes,
I know.
Which was crazy.
I mean, I have it on my I mean,
he earned it.
You didn't have it already?
I have it. So that gets us through the Patrick David storylines. Yes. One other big arc is Alexis's growth this season as she pitches the idea of Singles Week. Moira kind of steals it for a second. Yeah. We see Moira and Johnny get mistaken for swingers or for a second. But this all leads to the finale, which is titled Singles Week.
Moira, if I may. Listen, I can't speak to who Alexis was before you came here. And from what I've heard, I don't really want to dig any deeper into that. But what I can say is this. I have watched your daughter over the last couple of years grow into one of the most amazing people I've ever known. She is a hard worker. She is kind. And she is capable of so much more than people give her credit for.
Jocelyn, that is one of the most generous compliments one could receive as a mother.
I think it's sort of a culmination of all of our characters, and I think, you know, there's so much that happens with Johnny and Moira that, you know, we didn't have time to sort of discuss, but them being constantly sort of pushed further and further and further, and Moira getting involved in this fundraising initiative and not trusting her daughter because, historically speaking, Alexis was a bit of a loose cannon, and that storyline really, getting to play Moira and Alexis together was really fun because they didn't...
Their forced lunch date.
What's your favorite season? Awards, which was a Catherine line. I wish I could take credit for it. But it really was leading to this moment where Alexis says to her mother, like, I've got it. Or she's been put in a situation where she has to handle it, and she panics and then sort of proves to herself and to her mom that she has what it takes to be taken seriously. And in the process of that self-realization gets rewarded as the cherry on top with Ted coming back, realizing that, you know, she's going to be a different person than she was before, and that she's sure of herself and her own experiences enough to get into a relationship and have it mean something that actually makes her a better person and not just using men as a scapegoat. And that comes from a speech that David gives to Ted where he finally says, like, something has to be done here. He's watched his sister sort of go through the heartbreak of realizing that she wasn't the best person and she didn't treat him very well and that she took things for granted, and having this talk where David approaches Patrick and Ted and says, you know, she's different, and I think you should sort of
just the right amount of brotherly intervention. Like,
yeah, and then I eat a dog treat at the end, and it all sort of unravels and falls apart. And then David telling Patrick for the first time that he loves him, and the sort of the torment of it. And I think in that moment, I wrote about Mariah Carey, which at the time I think I remember my dad being like, I don't get the, so you're my Mariah Carey, and I'm like, it means something to me, and that's all that matters.
I do love how Patrick responds, like, you're like, I've only ever said that about three things. And
he knows exactly,
and he knows exactly who they are.
I love you. I know I'll never be able to compete with Mariah. This just kind of feels like one of those perfect moments that you dream about. Except in my dream, I'm holding a nice cup of tea. I'm kidding. I don't need the tea.
No, I am making this perfect moment perfect.
And that was sort of a big turning point for David, and then a big turning point for me personally when the show aired and Mariah Carey tweeted about it. You know, if nothing else came of my life, that would be a nice way to go. But I think season four was the season that really roped people into the show. I think we had been slowly but surely building people who were interested, and I think getting to a point where we could earn the kinds of emotional stakes really, I think, made people feel a kind of closeness to the show that was beyond just the comedy, that we were sort of in the process of exploring sort of new and uncharted territories for not just sort of queer relationships, which just happened. It wasn't like we were trying to teach a lesson here. It was just a fun thing to do. But also that you can be a comedy and not be scared of drama as well.
Or emotion.
Or emotion. Yeah. Or love. Mm-hmm.
Don't be afraid of love.
Don't be afraid of love,
everybody.
Don't be
afraid of love, Dan. Well, that season four of Schitt's Creek.
That's like, yeah. I mean, that's it. that's a nutshell version. That's season four in a pistachio shell.
There we go. This is in a nutshell.
thank you so much for listening to EW's Binge. And thank you, Dan, for joining us for this marathon. And you can watch more video on EW.com. Make sure to rate, subscribe, all those things. Comment, tell us what you think.
We didn't talk about your favorite moment. We'll talk to you about it on Twitter. Exactly. I know you can hit me up.
I'm open. Yeah. I'm, you know, I got some time.
Sure.
Yeah, you know, you're not doing anything.
No.
but you can find me at Patrick Gomez LA on Twitter or Instagram.
I'm at Shayna Naomi.
Is that a Twitter and Instagram?
It is, yeah.
Wow, why did I separate the two?
I don't know.
Stupid.
Dan J. Levy.
Dan J. Levy on Twitter. Insta Dan J. Levy. Creative choice on Instagram.
Definitely make sure to come back and listen to our next episode where we're going to talk about Schitt's Creek season 5. Thanks so much.